testify on this bill? I think those are the only people we have, Bill.
Strange bedfellow.
The committee will confine its comments on this bill.
Okay.
Representative Dix.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much for hearing the bill. My name is David Dix. I'm a state representative from District 41. I've introduced House Bill 2495 after being contacted by one of my constituents and that person explaining to me their experience with respect to a member of their family. And in this case, the member of the family was involved with one of the local establishments that has nude dancing in Eugene. A couple of months ago, this constituent was informed by his wife that his 18-year-old stepdaughter was dancing nude at a local strip bar. He was under the impression, as was I when I was contacted, that it was illegal for anyone to be in a bar that was under 21 and decided he would go out for himself and check it out. His wife was concerned that that he wouldn't be safe in the establishment, so he took along his son, who in this case was 6'4 and about 250 pounds, just to make sure that the father would be safe. The two arrived at the bar, and the bouncer refused to allow the son, who was 19 years of age, to enter the establishment. Even though the father insisted at the time, he just wanted to go in and have a chat with the stepdaughter. And rightfully so, the bouncers at that time refused to allow the son to enter the establishment because he was underage. He explained to the bouncer once he got inside the establishment, he ended up going in without the stepson, that in fact his daughter was underage. And the bouncer explained to him that in fact she could entertain under state law and be underage. The constituent I'm talking to about is a high school teacher, and since the incident, he's discovered that his stepdaughter is not the only minor dancing at these strip bars. Two other 18-year-olds who are seniors in high school are dancing at local strip bars legally. In ORS Chapter 471, Section 430, Subsection 3, it provides that except as authorized by rule, quote unquote, a person must be 21 to be on the premise that serves alcoholic beverages. The rule that supplies the exception is in Oregon Administrative Rules, Chapter 845, Division 6, Subdivision 35, Section 5, and this rule allows minors that are 18 to 20 years of age or 18 to 20 years old to entertain, providing they do not drink and when they're on break that they may not be in the area where alcohol is being served. I don't believe minors should be dancing in a state of nudity, especially in establishments where it is unlawful for most minors to be anyway. I think that's just asking for trouble. This committee may hear during the course of discussion on this bill that in some instances minors are putting themselves through college by dancing nude in bars. I know my office has been contacted by a couple of establishment owners. I have not been contacted by anybody who's actually going to be affected by this particular piece of legislation, but owners of establishments have contacted me and berated me saying that they're doing a great public service by allowing these people to dance and how good the money is. I just feel that the law should be amended, and in this case what our bill does is make sure that there won't be rulemaking authority given to the appropriate agency in order to kind of get around the law. I don't have any problem with people entertaining in the sense of band members being able to go into bars and entertain, but I do think that we run into trouble by allowing this particular form of entertainment.
Questions to Representative Dix? Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Representative Glory has a question. I simply am here to...
Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You are, in fact, specifically singling out nude dancing as opposed to other dancing or dancing in other conditions.
Yes, just dancing in what is defined as a state of nudity, which I think is both total nudity and topless dancing.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to kind of ask a question maybe of the chair, and that is I'm aware of at least one, if not a whole multitude of bills that, in fact, just would outlaw establishments having new dancing or
well, yes. That's true, but this bill is a little bit of a different genre. This is predicated on the idea of control of minors, I believe, and the law gives you a lot more leeway on the control of minors, and I Lord knows I don't want to talk constitutionality in here today, but I don't think there's a lot of constitutional objection to this. I may be wrong, Representative Clark.
No, I think what Representative Cleary is talking about is right. The proposals that are flying around would be propose constitutional amendments that would allow either the legislature or cities and counties
to regulate
or prohibit nude dances. This, as I understand it, goes to a different issue, and that's, as you mentioned, the minors issue.
Exactly.
And it goes at the people who hire these folks and those folks themselves. I do have a question when you get to me.
Well, if I might, Representative, and I know the question wasn't addressed to me. I'm a co-sponsor on at least one of those pieces of legislation, and I don't have any problem with us constitutionally giving local entities the ability to regulate those establishments. In the meantime, and let's say a county decides that it's in their best interest not to regulate them or impose restrictions that don't allow them, I don't want minors, high school seniors in particular, to be in a position to be able to go out and entertain people in this way and make money. I mean, I may differ with some members of the committee. I think we have a difficult time legislating morality. We can certainly regulate who is going to get involved in these kinds of activities. So my purpose is, like Representative Mason talked about, is the minor aspects. I have no problem with the constitutional amendment giving local entities the authority to regulate these establishments. And I know there have been instances where there have been trouble, where you have these establishments next to schools, I think, in one instance, and they can't do anything about it.
Right. Just to follow up on that, Mr. Chair, the cases, the Oregon cases, striking down the regulation of the dancing stuff are all come under Oregon's free speech clause. And I think it's important to note for the record that the purpose of this bill, as I understand it from the sponsors, is not to get at that speech issue, but to get at the age issue. A rational purpose for doing that. It's that line from 21 on down. That'd be a fair statement there.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, that would be a correct statement of our intent, and I think that's all this bill does. And I would concur that in order to make the other changes that are suggested in the Assembly, you do indeed need to affect the Oregon Constitution.
Representative Minnis.
The bill talks about accepting compensation for the kind of activity that you're desiring to. If someone was to do that for free, would this bill take care of that?
Go ahead, Mr. Dixon.
Well, I'm not certain it does as it's written, and I would have to ask counsel about that. But I can't imagine a circumstance where someone would do it for free.
Mr. Chair.
In a bar?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Clark.
There are at least two of these facilities in my district, and there have been some news articles about them. And from those articles, it's my understanding what happens is the tips are pretty generous. The actual compensation from the establishment is probably next to nothing. Tips from the patrons are where these folks are making their money. And so if Representative Minnis raises a good issue there, if you're trying to get at the person who's hiring these people.
I think if I'm not, and I may be wrong about this, but I think as I read the law, in order to allow someone underage into one of these establishments, you have to hire them.
You're probably right.
They're not supposed to be in there for free. In other words, you run into the situation with the 19-year-old at the door being carded. In other words, you have to compensate them or hire them to do this.
Chairman, Representative, I don't necessarily disagree with you, but I think the direction that you're going really has to deal with establishments that serve alcohol. There's at least one establishment in the city of Portland by the name of Club Macombo or Combo or something like that. I don't know. They don't serve alcohol. Because they don't serve alcohol, they circumvent some of the OLCC rules, and these little ladies can dance on your table nude. Whereas if they're in an establishment where they did serve alcohol, there has to be a bar restraining the person dancing from the person who's viewing the activity. So I guess what I'm saying is I think we need to clarify some of the issues about whether we're talking about establishments that are serving alcohol regulated by OLCC, or if we're just an outright ban on someone under the age of 21 dancing nude in any public establishment.
This bill doesn't deal with, we tried to address that question with the legislation. It doesn't say anything about alcohol. You can't dance in a state of nudity or be hired to dance in a state of nudity in an establishment that serves alcohol or an establishment that doesn't serve alcohol. That's not.
As to the prohibition.
I'm sorry?
Where is the prohibition on that statute now?
This bill addresses ORS 167.060 and 167.095, as opposed to the chapter that I cited earlier, which is 471.430, which I think is what where it says accept as authorized by rule, and it gets into a discussion of when you can serve alcohol and who can be around when you do serve alcohol. So the two chapters, the first in Section 1 of the bill, are different than ORS 471, Section 430.
Mr. Chairman, again, which statute specifically prohibits someone in an alcohol or from doing it at all? Am I confused?
I think
I'm confused.
It may not be the first time I've confused you, Representative.
That's all right.
I'd like to move on. I mean,
I'd like to understand it myself.
We may return to this bill. I mean, we don't even have a quorum, so it's obvious that we're not.
My understanding in ORS Chapter 471, Section 430, Subsection 3, it provides that, quote, except as authorized by rule, a person must be 21 on the premise that serves alcoholic beverages. The rule that supplies the exception is in Oregon Administrative Rules, Chapter 845, Division 6, Subdivision 35, Section 5, and this rule allows minors that are 18 to 20 years old to entertain, providing they do not drink, and when they are on break, they may not be in an area where they are serving alcohol. Our bill doesn't address that, the rule part of it, or alcoholic beverages. Our bill in Section 1 says Sections 2 and 3 of this Act are added to and made a part of ORS 167.060 to 167.095, and it simply says, no matter what agency has rulemaking authority, no one under 21 shall dance in a state of nudity in any establishment for compensation. Doesn't matter if you're serving alcoholic beverages or not. So it gets to the question that you posed about a bar in Portland that doesn't, or a juice bar that doesn't serve alcohol.
It would deal with a juice bar.
Or a coffee house, yeah. Exactly.
Good.
That's the intent.
I was simply going to conclude the same thing, that this does not make any reference to an establishment of any kind, just simply creates the crime.
Actually, it's a relatively cut and dried issue whether or not you want to prohibit this type of conduct between 18 and 21. I assume under 18, that we're covered under other statutes under 18, I believe.
Sure, it would be interesting to look at State versus Henry and see what the court, how they drew the line between 18 and 21 in terms of adult versus minor offenses.
Further question? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I don't believe I have anybody else signed up on 2495. Anybody on 2495? Okay. Why don't we close the hearing on 2495 and move over to 2430. This is a bill that makes illegal drug trafficker. Guilty of murder when drug results in death. Signed up today, we have Representative Burton, and Representative Senator Phillips has returned as if by magic. Representative Burton, who would you like also to?
I'd like to ask Bradley and Jim McIntyre to join.
Don Bradley and Jim McIntyre and Representative Burton. Very high powered group here.
As long as they couldn't get a quorum in revenue, I thought I'd come up here and be
in committee with a quorum.
I wish we could kind of fold you back in here for a few moments.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Mike Burton, State Representative, District 17, and I'll ask my cohorts here to introduce themselves for the record as they go through. But we will, Mr. McIntyre, who was from the District Attorney's Office in Multnomah County, will be proposing some potential amendments that we'll bring back in. But let me just briefly overview on the bill itself. House Bill 2430 is a bill that in essence was passed by the House of Representatives in the 1987 session. This same measure was before us. I don't recall the bill number on it. It did not pass muster in the Senate, however, but was passed by this chamber last session. And the reasons for the bill remain the same as they were in 1987. We have, basically, this is what I call the long-range hammer. It allows the prosecutors to sort of chase up the drug chain, if you would, to try to find those individuals who are really the main distributors of a lot of the drugs in our society today. It also gives the district attorneys the option of chasing a felony murder for these issues, which allows more resources to be put on those cases where they think it's necessary. The kinds of problems that we have with drugs in our society, I don't think I need to iterate it to all of you here, but we have in a package of bills that Senator Phillips and I have co-sponsored on behalf of Citizens for Drug-Free Oregon a number of measures. This is one of those, and they should be taken in some sense collectively to try to deal with some of the drug problems that we're faced with today. And our package includes both a juvenile diversion plan and an educational component. This one is part of the law enforcement aspect, and it's a tool we feel that the prosecutor ought to have available to them for the kinds of problems that we're dealing with on distribution and dealership. In Multnomah County last year, there was over 300 babies born who were drug addicted when they at birth. We had an increase in deaths due to overdoses from drugs in our state last year. I think it was an increase of over 100% practically from the previous year in certain categories. The devastation that's bringing to our society and the fact that we haven't really come to grips with that must be addressed at both ends of the scale, both in the supply and the demand end of it. And this is a measure that we feel would be useful on dealing with some of the to get at the real essence of some of the people who are supplying drugs in the drug chain, and will allow a more definitive look at it. I would like you to note that felony murder is not aggravated murder. I think you all know that. This is not a death penalty measure. This is a seven-level crime category, and so that, I think probably Mr. McIntyre could explain why we did it that way, but it essentially allows a greater latitude of prosecution in this case than it would if we were under the other.
I was almost a little reluctant that you pointed it out to this committee, but that's...
Well, you know, I sat on this committee, and there's at least two members of this committee who are not attorneys, and some of us who would prefer to remain clearly not attorneys in this function. So the fact is three of you here. You're outnumbered, as a matter of fact, Mr. Chairman, around the table. But at that, I'm going to stop because I do have a quorum in Ways and Means, and I've got to go down there and vote on the Department of Education's budget. So I'm going to leave unless there's questions specific at me. I think two gentlemen I'm going to leave the table are fully capable of answering any questions, and will do so.
Any Thank questions for Representative Burton before you guys go down? That's a good thing.
Thank you, Mr. Phillips. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Paul Phillips, State Senator, District 4, which is in Washington County. Mike briefly went over the bill. Let me just expand on it just slightly. As Citizens for a Drug-Free Oregon developed its agenda, it's important to note that it is an agenda. This is one part of a comprehensive package. The testimony that you'll hear on the technical side today will expand it to make it an even better bill. When we took this package around the state, this is one issue that the public could seize, could understand, and could agree with. The closing point that Mike made about this not being a death penalty, a lot of questions as to why not.
That's quite a good point.
Yeah, it's an issue that you can choose to wrestle with or not. I believe, frankly, the bill as it stands right now is a good tool that is a practical tool that can be improved upon by your due deliberation, and I would congratulate you for the expeditious handling of previous bills and would encourage you to deal with this in a similar fashion. I think that message is clear enough, and with that, I'll be glad to answer any questions that you may have. If you don't, I'll turn it over to the technical people, and I'll go back to revenue and deal with the mundane issues of school finance.
It's interesting that half this committee are co-sponsored this bill.
Yeah, and not only that, on the Citizens for Drug-Free Oregon, those two bills are exactly the same, and the support is strong on both. So the committee has made a strong statement. You can improve the bill and move it on. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Let me ask you about the Senate, the other place. Senate Bill 457, where is that in that swirl of ether over there?
In the morass of It is, I'm sure, going to receive due deliberation in Senator Cohen's committee and judiciary. She's made every indication that she will take these as they come. The entire package of approximately 15 bills was introduced over there, duplicating a lot of the bills as you've already dealt with. I'm sure that the Senate sees your handling of those and is anxious to deal with them as they come through in a package. So, but I can't speak for Senator Cohen or her committee, but I'm sure she'll deal with them in due process.
Any questions, Senator Phillips?
Thank you very much.
Mr. McIntyre.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is James McIntyre, and I'm the Deputy District Attorney of Multnomah County. I have am currently the attorney in charge of the Violent Crimes Unit within the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office. I've done that for about the past year and a half. Prior to that, I was the head of the Narcotics Unit for about 2 years. I've had a chance to review the bill, and there are actually, as I read the bill and the amendments that are being suggested to it, there are three sections of the bill, two related and one that appears on its face to be unrelated, but it's really not, and I'll go over that with you. Item J, delivery of a controlled substance as defined, K, assault in the first degree, and then CA, dealing with the introduction of a controlled substance and making these offenses felony murder, that is that the dealers would be held responsible for the deaths of the users.
I just stop you for a moment.
Sure.
Sound terribly professorial here for a minute. For Representative Bryan, Representative Clory, the term felony murder, I think you're probably familiar with it. But for Representative Clory, that's a term of art in the law. And it basically is an old concept that whenever a person dies during the commission of felony, it then bootstraps it up into the highest level of homicide. And so every time you hear the term felony murder, realize that you're talking about a vast and existing body of law. And it's not in the least bit strange. In fact, how far does it go back?
It springs from the common law.
People tend to bandy about the term felony murder, assuming that everybody knows what they're talking about, and that, for your information.
Well, that's why there's a specific list of enumerated felonies that precede the amendments that are being proposed. That's where it springs from, the term felony murder. In reviewing the bill, there are a couple, on its face, there are a couple of suggestions that I would make to the committee as to amendments. There were, in item J, right now we have enumerated delivery of a controlled substance without definition as to schedule. Now, as the Oregon statutes are in place, different drugs are contained within different what are called drug schedules. Yes. The schedules are established by the Food and Drug Administration, and we adopt the federal schedules within Oregon. I have heard some questions or comments that perhaps we should say just Schedule 1, or perhaps we should say Schedule 1 and Schedule 2, excluding marijuana. And I would urge the committee to adopt part of this, and that is that you should say delivery of a controlled substance in Schedules 1 and 2. That would cover heroin, LSD, cocaine, and, of course, the commonly referred to and highly potent crack. That would also cover methamphetamine. For our purposes, and speaking for Mr. Shrunk at the District Attorney's Office in Multnomah County, the ones that I've specifically talked about are the drugs that we are seeing most commonly and causing the greatest trouble. But I am not advocating that you exclude marijuana. And the reason that I'm not doing that is because marijuana has become a large growth industry within the state of Oregon. And as part and parcel of that, I think that you should change item J to say not only delivery, but you should include the crime of manufacturing a controlled substance. Because manufacturing of a controlled substance is growing marijuana. It is also manufacturing methamphetamine. And legally and arguably, it could also be producing crack cocaine from the cocaine base, the cocaine powder. That would also be the manufacturing. And the reason for that is because of the fact that law enforcement is time and time again running up against people involved in the distribution and manufacturing of controlled substances who are heavily armed, are more than willing to have firearms and automatic weapons to protect their enterprises. Not only are the law enforcement people running up against that, but the users themselves are running into drug dealers and drug manufacturers who are involved in the use of firearms and heavy weapons that would shock the conscience of most people from 10 or 15 years ago. I think that anyone who is engaged in the manufacturing of a controlled substance in Schedule 1 or 2 or delivery of a controlled substance in Schedule 1 or 2, and while they are attempting to do that or while they are doing that, they cause the death of another person or someone is acting as their accomplice causes the death of another person, that should be handled as a felony murder.
Chair.
Representative Clark.
Can I end up with a question right here?
Certainly.
As I hear what you're saying on the manufacturer, you're talking about you're not talking about what I'll call a products liability approach. And why not? I mean, why can't, if I manufacture this stuff, you can find that I did it.
Mm-hmm.
Why should we limit it to situations where I pick up a submachine gun, kill someone who's coming into my manufacturing spot?
As I follow your reasoning, that we could cover that in the some appropriate amendments in the second in paragraph B, which would deal with the distribution. As I follow your reasoning, Representative
right.
Clark, if you want to continue on up the ladder, as it
sure.
were, to the manufacturer,
say,
and I'm in complete agreement with
liability
that.
Liability approach.
Right.
To the thing.
I'm in complete agreement with that. Really, what I'm addressing here, and the reason I became concerned in reading the bill, is we have, if the committee's not aware of it, the public certainly should be aware of it. I know of United States Forest Service personnel who have gone into wild grow operations and come across booby-trapped hand grenades that were set there to protect the grow operations. We have had underground grow operations that were protected by electronic surveillance and cameras and videos. In Portland, we have crack houses and rock cocaine houses that are protected with automatic weapons and shotguns. And those people should not be able to engage in this kind of a felony offense, and then if, for instance, someone, not even law enforcement, happens to get involved with them and they end up killing them, they should not have the protection. They should not be able to not be pursued as a felony murderer. And that's why I would propose the first set of amendments there in item J. As to, I want to skip down for a second into the body of the bill that deals with introduction of a controlled substance by any means. Again, I think you should delineate that and state, put it in Schedules 1 and 2. That would bring it more in conformity with your other felony drug offenses. And then paragraph B, as used in this paragraph, you define delivery to the decedent by the defendant. I think that the word defendant should be stricken and the word distributor would be a more appropriate word placed into the bill. A distributor could then be defined as simply as possible, that is one that distributes. And we wouldn't your statutory language could, in fact, by using the word defendant, cause us, from my perspective as a trial lawyer, some problems at proof and trial. That is, who is a defendant legally? That's a term of art. I think that these amendments are necessary. I think that they are necessary in the continuing pursuit. We spent a lot of time talking about people where our focus is going to be the dealers. Our focus is going to be the people delivering. Well, I think it's the time that the dealers, the manufacturers, and the distributors realize that not only are they going to be held account for their illegal conduct in the distribution of narcotics, but the end effect, that is, if drugs kill people and you're going to sell something that kills people, then you're going to be held accountable for murder. And that's all that we're trying, that's all that I can see the intent of this bill. As to the second portion of this bill, actually I should say the third portion, which I said appears to be a little bit unrelated, I don't want to take away from the importance of item number K, assault in the first degree. It's easy, even just by its simple placement, I know psychologically it's easy to lose this element of the bill in the reading of it. And I think that is an extremely important amendment to the felony murder statutes in Oregon. I have tried at least two very serious murder cases that involved a defendant who was involved in the racial killing of the victim. And I say that because I know that there have been other bills addressed that want to make to raise that to the aggravated murder statutes. I want to show you an example, though, of what happens without having assault in the first degree in here as a felony murder. In around May of 1985, a young man by the name of Jap Van Dang was in a telephone booth at 72nd and Killingsworth in Portland, Oregon. He stayed in the phone booth too long for a man by the name of Gary Lester Peterson. Gary Lester Peterson did not like people who were of Asian descent. That we found out later on, actually. He attacked Mr. Jap Van Dang in the phone booth and stabbed him once in the neck. When the case was brought to trial, he was indicted for murder. He was tried on a murder count. During the trial, his defense became, I did not intend to kill Mr. Van Dang. I only intended to stab him. There was no jury instruction in place, because it was not the law, that if you intend to cause somebody serious physical injury, that is, you intend to cause them a substantial risk of death, and a death occurs, you can be held responsible for murder. That did not exist. The only thing that the jury heard was, you must specifically intend to kill somebody